From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oakland.
I live on Belvedere Street, two blocks up from Haight.
I'm from the Sunset.
A foggy inner sunset.
I live in the Mesh.
Coming up, we'll see how fashion has made its way into prosthetic legs.
I felt like a superhero, and it just looked really cool, a RoboCop-ish.
Then we hear one woman's story about dressing dapper for the female butch body.
I wear men's clothes, men's or boys' clothes. I don't shop in the women's section.
Plus, we get the inside scoop on one of San Francisco's most sought-after clothing sales.
This is my favorite part, is walking across the room and walking past a 19th century maid, a gladiator, and a crazy dirty monk.
We're making heads turn, talking alternative fashion in the Bay. That's coming up on Cross Currents. San Francisco isn't recognized as one of the fashion capitals of the world, but it's definitely known for its quirky style. Fashion in the Bay Area is as varied as the people who live here, from the downtown conservative suits to steampunk, goth, dapper, boho chic, to the comfort of just whatever happens to be clean. We went to the streets to ask some people about their sense of style.
My name's Kathy Kite.
My name is Mauricio. My last name is Ortiz.
My name is Kiana Nicole Henderson.
Michelangelo Capraro is my name.
My name is Richard Hargraves.
I am wearing boots and yoga pants and a sweatshirt.
I could tell how much money a person got by the way he dresses. Casual, color coordinates, and all this and that.
Boots are very popular out here, especially amongst the girls, because they're really cute, and you can wear them. Well, we tend to wear them all seasons, winter, summer. You know, you'll put it with some little short shorts or a skirt or a dress.
I'm wearing some jeans, a blue jacket, a polka dot shirt, and a blue polka dot tie, and some brown boots.
I like to wear suits. One of my goals in life is to be able to wear 30 suits in 30 days.
But accidentally, I grabbed the wrong hat. I grabbed my Giants hat. I was supposed to grab my Niner hat.
You know, they say look good, feel good. I'm a church-going man. The attention that you get from people other than, you know, walking down the street, because I had the SAG life as well, and it gives a different type of attention.
This is my comfortable look with the tank tops and the hooded sweatshirt with some bling, because I got to have some bling.
And bling can sometimes be found in unexpected places.
I felt like a superhero because I had a chrome one. The back was chrome, and the front was black, and it just looked really cool, a RoboCop-ish, and I just loved it.
That's Deborah Bevilacqua, who wears a prosthetic limb. But it may not be like the limbs you've seen before. Traditionally, limbs were designed to be mechanical and practical, not shaped like an actual leg. They weren't meant to be fashionable, just functional. Now, one San Francisco company's trying to change that by combining the growing technology of 3D printing with the expertise of industrial designers to blur the line between fashion and medicine. KLW's Angela Johnston brings us the story.
That's the socket. That is the aluminum thing.
When Deborah Bevilacqua lost her leg in a motorcycle accident 10 years ago, she had to get a prosthetic leg.
It's a rubber ball.
It's been functional, she says, but it's not pretty.
It's bulky, and it's a big black bulky thing with a big black bulky other thing attached to it. And then a big gray metal bulbous ball that's for rotation and shock, but looks kind of like Epcot Center. And then, doesn't it? And then this huge metal, I think that's aluminum. This huge metal aluminum thing. And then, look, the prosthetist put a sticker of his logo on here for some reason. I don't know why that's there. It's kind of, in case I lose it, I guess, which is good. And then these little metal pylons.
As we sit in her room in Alameda, Bevilacqua shows me how her new leg works.
The foot down here, which actually is a new foot and kind of cool looking because it's curved, carbon fiber curved, kind of like a running blade. So it has a lot of spring.
Which is great for the triathlons and races Bevilacqua loves to compete in. But she says it's not easy to wear a prosthetic and be fashionable.
They're awful. I think for women, wearing a prosthetic is a really difficult thing because these feet, these hideous, ugly feet. I'm going to show you. This is the thing that makes me the most mad. So it's just an out-of-the-box foot. And as you can see, it gets scuff marks that do not come off. So you're just stuck with this thing. You can't wear flip-flops or because it doesn't have a split toe.
So when a San Francisco startup called Bespoke was looking for amputees to test out their 3D-printed prosthetic coverings, Bevilacqua was in. She was asked to help design a fashionable, realistic covering that surrounds the metal pole of her prosthetic leg. It's called a fairing. She showed her design ideas to the head of the company.
I sent him a bunch of surrealistic images. Oh, and I'm sure he was like, what is this stuff? How do you take this, like Salvador Dali and Duchamp, and turn it into a fairing?
And after a long process of coming up with the perfect design, Bevilacqua walked away with a fairing that had her style written all over it. A black lace pattern on the front and a shiny chrome back. It gave her leg its natural shape again. She bought skirts and dresses for the first time in years. It looks really cool.
I just loved it. I just immediately started wearing short skirts and going to the movies and just watching people's reactions to it, which was really fun.
Now, Bevilacqua has 4 different fairings, which she can change based on her mood, activity, or outfit.
I might not have the very first one. It's like a drawer full of legs. My favorite one has metal on the back. I don't know where it is. It could be in there. It used to be attached to my bike leg, which was really awesome because you're riding my bike and this shiny silver chrome leg and with like black lace on the front. Now that looked pretty badass.
Bevilacqua says that after she started wearing fairings, she noticed some changes about herself as well.
I felt like I got a lot of confidence from wearing the leg. Before that, I would just cover up and pretend I wasn't an amputee and didn't want anyone to know. And then I just wanted to show my leg off because it was just so amazing looking. So I think it's sort of therapy. It definitely was for me.
This feeling of empowerment is one of the reasons why Bespoke's founder, Scott Summit, started the company back in 2008.
This was one of the first applications we did. This was for a 1-year-old who had fallen down the stairs and broken her tibia. So we 3D printed this as an experiment to see if it would work.
Summit gives me a tour of Bespoke, which is now a part of a larger 3D printing company called 3D Systems. It's located in a converted apartment in San Francisco's SoMa neighborhood. They experiment with everything from 3D printed fabric, pottery, prosthetic fairings, and scoliosis braces, like the one Summit designed for a 1-year-old girl.
We scanned her and printed this, and she wore it for her healing process. When she was done, she was not only healed, she didn't want to give her brace back.
These braces and casts rest on top of shelves in the office. And sometimes when you open the dishwasher in their kitchen, you can find a couple of 3D printed arms and legs next to the coffee mugs. Washing them makes the plastic stronger. After an amputee decides they want a Bespoke fairing, they have to get scanned in person with a small scanner the size of a paperback book. Chad Crittenden lost his leg to cancer in 2002. He came into the Bespoke offices a few years after to get fitted for his first fairing.
So what we've done is we've taken a scan, a 3D scan of my sound side leg, of my left leg in this case. The scan creates a computer-assisted design file on the computer like you've seen on TV, that thing that goes around 360 degrees. We do the mirror image or the reverse image of that sound side leg and create a fairing shape of the non-existent lower limb and calf.
Capturing every curve and shape of the leg. Then the 3D scanned image is sent to a computer, where designers can add detail with any type of patterns and cutouts. Designs that are influenced by everything from nature and historical fabrics, architecture, or things that are important to the amputee.
I have the one that I'm wearing now, which is kind of a tattoo pattern. I have one of the very first ones. It was just circular shapes. I like the circle motif in art, and then there's my soccer fairing as well.
Crittenden is now the sales manager at Bespoke and 3D Systems. Before we met, he was in Boston scanning the legs of the Boston Marathon bombing victims. Crittenden has 4 different fairings, and he's always looking for inspiration for his next.
I was recently in Lithuania, and I was walking along the street and saw some amazing manhole covers. And these patterns were just incredible.
According to the founder, Scott Summit, the idea is not to make the fairing look exactly like a human leg.
Because you can't. That's flesh and blood. So we instead try to say that we're making something that's unapologetically man-made. It's beautiful, it looks completely appropriate on the person, but it doesn't try to be that person.
Once a designer and an amputee agree upon the design, the final file is digitally sent to a large room of 3D printers.
This is the lovely, wonderful machine that we print all the fairings on.
The printer is massive. Summit tells me it cost about $800,000. It's about the size of a walk-in closet and has a tiny glass window to watch the transformation happening inside. Lasers move quickly back and forth and build a solid shape out of nylon dust. And from all of this dust, out comes an entire fairing in one piece.
These are strong. They'll survive anything.
But 3D printing isn't cheap, and neither are bespoke fairings. It costs $4,000 for a basic leg, $6,000 for additional leathers or metals or designs. Summit's goal is to streamline and lower the cost of making a fairing so anyone can do it anytime. So someone like Chad Crittenden can use just an iPad to make a new fairing whenever he wants to change up his style. Back in the 3D printing room, Chad Crittenden shows me how easy it is to put his fairing on his prosthetic leg. But it's when Crittenden takes his fairing off that he notices the biggest change.
I realized that it looked cool, but what I didn't realize is that subconsciously or sort of internally, I was seeing this symmetry and the sort of formation of my non-existent limb. So it was sort of restoring my shape. And psychologically, I think that was pretty important to get that back. Once we took it off, I realized I wanted to get that back on. I felt this sort of need to get that back there.
It gave him more of himself back, a renewed sense of confidence and self-control.
I'm out there to show this, and I'm not trying to hide anything. So that allows people to come up and ask about it and starts a conversation, and it really begins to bring down those barriers between those with disabilities and the mainstream.
Something that's possible with this unique combination of medicine, technology, and fashion. In San Francisco, for Cross Currents, I'm Angela Johnston.
You can find more information on Bespoke on our website, kalw.org, and click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. While some of us dread the daily "what do I wear today" conundrum, for some people, getting dressed up in the morning is like a ritual and a commitment to leave the house in nothing but their finest.
I started wearing bow ties this year, like every day, so also neckties. I just dress around the bow tie. Yeah, I'm loving the bow ties.
That's Michelangelo Caprero. We spotted his unique look in San Francisco's Bernal Heights neighborhood. Caprero is embracing the dapper fashion of the 1950s and 60s, a look that's been making a comeback over the past few years. Some major fashion outlets like Banana Republic have modeled an entire line after the popular TV program Mad Men.
We've taken Mad Men and made it into the Banana Republic customer.
It's so elegant and beautiful.
No corseting.
But for a woman who prefers to dress in a more masculine style, certain looks can be a challenge. Today, we have a peek into the closet of one local woman who defines herself as a dapper butch and has created a style she calls her own. KLW's Leela Day brings us the story.
And I think today what I'm going to wear is a tweed sports coat that I got years ago in Bloomingdale's, actually. It was on sale.
Twee Nguyen is going through her closet. Her clothes are arranged neatly. Lots of blues and grays with a collection of colorful bow ties.
Today I'm going to wear this oxblood knit tie. I usually think like having like a little subtle detail in your outfit really brings out your whole outfit.
Nguyen says that her sense of fashion came at a young age. Her mother was a seamstress and took pride in the outfits she made for her and her brothers. And Nguyen made sure her mom knew that she wasn't into frills and puffy pink dresses.
It's like, put it on, take a picture, and hurry the up and take it off me, you know? It's like, get this big bow off me. God, like, what are you putting me in this, like, weird garment?
With time, her mom began to embrace her daughter's masculine style. She started sewing her lavender pantsuits instead of dresses.
I always kind of would demand to, like, have it a certain look. Like, I would, if she was going to say, I'm going to make you this, and I would be like, okay, as long as you put the pockets here, and I want it to be like this, and, you know, so I would try to direct her to, like, not make it too girly the way that she would want it to be, and I would always suggest, like, can you kind of make it, like, you know, like, boyish.
Eventually, Nguyen learned to sew her own clothes, taper her own jeans, and create her own sense of fashion, one that allowed her to express her identity as a butch woman. She says finding the right fit among store-bought clothes isn't just frustrating, but it's sometimes embarrassing.
I used to always shop in the men's section, or because I'm small, one day it hit me, I was like, oh, let's see what's in the boys' section.
She says she got used to the weird looks she'd get from salespeople and their attempts to redirect her to the women's section. But even boys' clothes are limiting for a butch woman.
There are certain men's boxer briefs that I like. And sometimes, you know, I'll go shopping and, you know, so many of them have, yeah, like the bulge where I'm just like, it just looks funny on me. Like my style is generally like, I like things to fit me right. It has to be the right length on my sleeves. It has to be the right length of pants. Button-down shirts, you know, with men's shirts can be a little tricky because women have shape.
But that shape isn't something she wants to accentuate.
That's another thing that some butch women have to struggle with, is like finding clothes that fit for them that will still look masculine, but they don't necessarily want to accentuate the curves, you know. And I think, you know, some busty butches wear binding, you know, so or they have top surgery.
Binding is when women use a tight fabric to minimize their chest size. Nguyen says she doesn't need to do this because she's small up top. But she also says that it's something most designers don't consider. Swimsuits are especially hard to find.
When you're going on vacation, you're like, oh, God, what do I wear for like, the beach, you know? Like, oftentimes, like, I find myself wearing, like a tank top underneath and then a t-shirt over, and I'm just like, gosh, why am I layering it? Like, I'm at the beach or I'm swimming. Like, this is all this layer is just weighing me down in the water.
Nguyen says that creating the right style for butch women is an exercise in creativity. She's surprised that butch fashion on its own doesn't have a stronger market in the Bay Area.
This has been an ongoing topic of conversation for a lot of for a lot of women in the queer community. Like, it's either like, well, no one has done it yet, or they don't have the money, or they've tried and they weren't able to be successful. Or I've always dreamt of like having a haberdashery for butch women.
So recently, she launched a clothing line. She'll measure your hips, bust, and inseam, and custom tailor that dapper look that Wynn says is making a comeback.
As a butch person, what fashion means to me is just, this is who I am, this is what I like, and I'm not trying to look like, I don't want to be a man, you know, like I'm very comfortable being a butch woman. I'm very comfortable having this like way of also like making other people who aren't very familiar with that type of identity just kind of like, hey, like, why do I think a woman should look like this, or and a man should look like this, like, or a girl should look like this, or a little boy should look like this? But just like thinking of like, oh, this is an individual person and this is their style.
So now her individual dapper butch style can be tailor-made for anyone, no strings attached. For Cross Currents, I'm Leela Day.
So what fashion trends have you noticed around the Bay? We asked a few people in our newsroom. Here's what they had to say.
Puffy jackets, lots of puffy vests.
Really adorable, pristine backpacks.
But yeah, I don't know anything about Barry fashion. I was going to talk just about me.
Fashion!
Especially, well, this summer I've noticed a lot of women wearing dresses that are really like thin fabric and look like they're from 1992.
The Bay Area would not be complete without plenty of North Face.
Backpacks that look like maybe they've never touched the ground, or like nobody's put anything in them.
Things that just fit nice instead of loose baggy crap.
Grandpa sweaters.
My shirt is from the company that I'm going to pronounce wrong. Sorry about that company. Uniqlo? Uniqlo? I don't know how to say it. There's no U after the Q.
I try to wear something that I might also sleep in.
I was once much more into like the baggy big things, and I think it looks really bad.
Or like bright bursts of like wavy neon.
There is one piece of clothing that I've seen hundreds of women wear, which is a black and white striped dress.
Those were Ted Muldoon, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, and Seth Samuel. Well, we want to hear from you. Give us a call on our tip line. We're 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And you may hear your call on the air.
Start wearing purple, wearing purple. Start wearing purple for me now. All your sanity and wits, they will all vanish, I promise. It's just a matter of time. So, yeah.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. People in San Francisco like to dress up. Theme parties, street fairs, Halloween, Dia de los Muertos, Pride, and of course, Burning Man. San Francisco seems to jump at any excuse to throw off daily wear in favor of something more theatrical. That explains why more than 2,500 people showed up for the recent San Francisco Opera Costume Shop sale. Steven Raspa is a community events organizer for Burning Man, and he was one of them.
I'm always a little sad to see all these amazing works of art leave the opera, but they show up in the most marvelous places in San Francisco all year long, and this is something that really fuels creative play and dress in the city, and I just love it.
People love the sale so much that some folks even camp out the night before just to make sure they could get in. This was only the fifth time in its 91-year history that the San Francisco Opera opened its costume closet to the public. The two-day event was a chance for the company to sell costumes they no longer need and to raise money for future productions. The good news is that more than 100,000 extraordinary outfits just entered the creative bloodstream of San Francisco and the Bay Area. The bad news? The sale probably won't happen again for at least 5 years, maybe longer. In the meantime, you'll have to live vicariously through KALW's David Boyer.
I heard about the sale from some of my Burning Man friends. Around noon on the first day, people started posting photos. One friend in a Marie Antoinette dress, wig included. Another in a gold lamé, Russian monk's robe with matching gold hat. Clearly, this was a sale not to be missed. By the time I get there, the line outside the San Francisco Opera Warehouse in Dogpatch is about 4 hours long. I think about hopping back in my car and catching up with friends post-brunch. Then I meet this guy, who's emerging from the bowels of what looks like an airplane hangar.
My name is Joseph Turian, and I'm wearing a turban right now. But when I was inside, I saw this one piece, and I was like, I don't know if that's going to fit me. And this fellow, he came up, he started helping me. And he's like, no, it's going to fit you. So it turns out his name is Christopher, and he's the head of costume. And he was telling me that what I got was the last Bob Mackie piece.
Bob Mackie, sometimes called the Sultan of Sequins, designed Cher's most outrageous outfits, and many for Liza, Bette Midler, Diana Ross, and a long list of divas. Basically, if it was sequined and worn by a star in the 80s, chances are good it was designed by him. Mackie also designed costumes for the opera, like that gold and black velvet beaded dress that Joseph Turian snagged.
Were you the one in the beaded gown?
Yeah, that was me. And he was giving me tips. He's like, never dry clean it. He's like, only spot clean it.
Excellent advice. It sounds like this Christopher person knows a thing or two. I need to find him. He just may be my ticket in.
He's inside. If they'll let me back in, I could just show you.
In the meantime, I'm waiting just outside in the loading zone, watching people emerge in one ornate outfit after another, practically taunting me. I need to get in there. And then a man approaches. There's no puff of smoke, but he makes a dramatic entrance with his Secret Service-style earpiece and no-nonsense, by-the-rules attitude.
So my name is Christopher Verdosi. I am the assistant costume director for the San Francisco Opera. Come this way. Okay. Let's go in here.
Christopher Verdosi is straight out of Central Casting. He's like my opera sale fairy godmother. He's wise and sassy, and he moves pretty fast, too. He grabs me by the hand and leads me through a crush of costume shoppers, narrating all along the way.
This is my favorite part, is walking across the room and walking past a 19th century maid, a gladiator, a Wotan, and a crazy dirty monk.
We're in a roped-off area where the most expensive costumes are located. From here, I can survey the entire scene. The room is massive. There are nearly 1,000 people buzzing around, trying things on, trying to catch a glimpse in one of the few mirrors in the room, and of course, rifling through nearly 100 racks of clothing of every color, period, and fabric. We're talking furs, laces, feathers, brocades, beads, and velvets. You name it, it's here.
We started this morning with over 125,000 costumes. I'd say we're probably down to about 75 now.
These costumes were made for operas and productions that the company knows they won't repeat. For the lucky people in the room, it's a rare chance to own pieces worn by opera royalty and created and constructed by master costumers, as well as a few famous fashion designers. And for Verdosi, it's a chance to share his encyclopedic knowledge of the costumes and productions, as well as his passion and reverence for the art form.
I think that costumes are infused with energy from the artist that wears it, from the artist that builds it, and it's more sad for costumes like this to sit on a rack unused for 20 years than to release them to people that will love them, cherish them, and because we're so lucky to live in San Francisco, wear them.
Wear them. That's exactly why I'm here. But just how much does one invest in a fur-lined cape or a suit of armor?
Everything runs from $1 up to $750. Some special pieces are here. Somebody asked me, why is this dirty coat and pants $500? Because that is from the legendary Christian Lacroix for the Capuletti and the Montagues.
That opera was a retelling of Romeo and Juliet. And if the name of the designer is familiar, you probably heard it on that 90s sitcom, Ab Fab.
Lacroix, sweetie. You know, people will think, wow, it's a Lacroix. Okay?
And then it happens.
Oh my God, I think I found your piece with your coloring. Gorgeous, right? And this gorgeous jacket is selling for, again, a whopping $35. No, I'm sorry, I stand corrected. This one is $25.
What's it made out of?
Wool.
I'm allergic, but I might have to deal with it.
Well, I think you might have to deal with it. Oh, God, it looks so good in the back. It has this little butt peplum. I mean, this little peplum.
Well, I love that the orange and burgundy jacket covers my tush. I can feel my skin heating up. My wool allergy is kicking in. It's hard to say no to this hand-selected bargain. But with dozens of racks to look through and an hour till they close, I have to pass on it. We move on to a rack of Renaissance-era dresses from the opera Die Meistersinger.
I'm looking for a Dickensian dress to wear to the Dickens Fair. Am I a little off?
You know, since things are separated by price, on one rack, you can be looking at 18th century, medieval, biblical, Renaissance. So, in my opinion, it's the hunt that's part of the fun.
Yes, definitely. So. We found things that we didn't even realize we were looking for. It's awesome.
What'd you get? Oh, my God. We got everything. We've got hats and capes and jackets. It's a lot of playa wear. I think my best find is this.
Wow. All of this beautiful trim down the front is vintage Bavarian metal lace. And if you could turn around, I just want to look at the label because then I could tell you even more about it. Wow, wow, wow. So, it's from the opera Tsar's Bride, but this was a co-production, and this is actually a vintage robe that was created at La Scala in Milan, the absolute best opera company in the world.
So I should not wear this on the playa.
This is one you should not wear on the playa.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So here's what I ended up buying. A mustard-colored tunic, a high-collared, peach-colored Elizabethan shirt, plus an Elizabethan page outfit with its hot pink gold-trimmed jacket, puffy breeches, and a matching red velvet cape. Some shoppers will wear the costumes to role-playing events like the Ren Fair or Steampunk Ball. Others will cart them out to the desert for Burning Man. For me, it's less about inhabiting a role or playing a part. It's a chance to incorporate these exquisitely crafted pieces into my daily wardrobe and articulate a heightened, more fabulous version of myself. For Cross Currents, I'm David Boyer.
Want to see pictures from the opera's costume closet? Go to our Facebook page. We are KALW. That's it for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Lawrence Chan, Audrey Dilling, Sandhya Dirks, Jeannie Dwan, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Suki Lewis, Ted Muldoon, Holly McDeed, Ryan Miller, Stephen Short, and Liza Veal. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel and produced by Leela Day. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio. This music is by longtime Bay Area jazz pianist Larry Vukovich. He plays this Friday night at Campbell Recital Hall at Stanford University as part of this year's Stanford Jazz Festival. All the details are at KALW.org. Click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.